Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Freedom of Species would like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, who are the traditional owners of the land on which we broadcast today. We pay our respect to the elders of all of the lands on which we meet across Australia.
Hi and welcome to Freedom of Species, where the show that brings animal advocacy to the airwaves of 3CR Community Radio. We have been on our summer break for the last few weeks, so hopefully you enjoyed our summer specials if you caught them. And you can also check out a bunch of other summer specials via the 3CR site. Also, Sally is still on her break from Out of the Pan, but you can check out any episodes you missed from 2025 via the 3CR website and also by searching Out of the Pan on your favourite podcast app. Today on the show, we are going to be discussing the movies, but perhaps also the book and musical and other things, but the Wicked series through an animal rights lens. And to join me in discussing that, I guess I should say I'm Nick, so I forget to say that, but I am joined by Claire. Hey, Claire.
Hi, nice to be here.
And Ruby.
Thanks for having me.
And Lottie.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So we've got a full studio. Maybe I'll hand it over to Lottie to kind of, do you want to give a bit more of in-depth of a sort of overview of what we're covering today?
Yeah. So as Nick said, we're covering Wicked, the musical and the recent movies, and through an animal rights and political perspective. I think I'll start with giving kind of a bit of a summary of where Wicked fits into the Oz landscape. So lots of people have probably heard of The Wizard of Oz. So this was originally a book, The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, written by L. Frank Baum in 1900. And then there was a movie adaptation in 1939. This is the version with Judy Garland that is very, very famous and popular and has been throughout the years. So that was in 1939, and then in 1995, Gregory Maguire wrote a book called Wicked, which kind of goes delves into further the backstory of some of the characters we know from The Wizard of Oz, particularly the Wicked Witch of the West, who's the green witch in The Wizard of Oz. Her name in Wicked is Elphaba, and it goes a lot through her backstory. Then in 2003, there was a musical adaptation of the book Wicked. And then in 2024 and 2025, there were the movie adaptations of the musical Wicked in 2024 and Wicked for Good. So The musical and the films are very different from the book Wicked. We're going to be focusing mostly on the musical and films. There's going to be spoilers for the musical and the films, just so everyone knows. And so, yeah, I think to kind of set the scene for why we're thinking about Wicked through an animal rights lens. So like I said, Elphaba is kind of the focus of Wicked. She is born green, so she's an outcast throughout her life. And also in Oz, there are animals who, if you've seen The Wizard of Oz, there's the Cowardly Lion. He's a lion who talks and, you know, seems human-like in some ways. So in the world of Oz, there are animals who talk, have jobs, and are kind of normal members of society, except that in the world of, in Elphaba's lifetime, they're starting to be kind of subjugated, oppressed, and so they're being taken away from being able to work in their jobs. They're starting to be kept in cages and measures are taken to try and get them to not learn to talk and things like that. Elphaba, being kind of marginalised herself, is a very compassionate person. She wants to stand up and fight for the animals, and that's kind of a big part of her journey.
Yeah, and I think maybe before we get into the politics of it, I just want to play a quick clip that's been discussed a bit recently. So this is from Nikki Glaser, the comedian, from her opening monologue for the recent annual Global Golden Globes. So I'm just going to play this just as a bit of an intro into thinking about, I guess, as an intro into like how we found the movies and stuff like that before we get into the politics of it, maybe. So, yeah, just going to play a quick clip from this.
Wicked was back with Wicked for Money. Oh, my God. So good. Once again, Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande gave us two career-defining performances. I mean, it was so emotional. I mean, 2 hours into that movie, I was just, like, in tears. Like, I can't believe there's 45 minutes left. It was just, like, too much. I'm kidding. A little long, but, like, I loved it. And, Ariana, I would listen to you sing The Phone Book.
So, I maybe I'll hand over to each of you, maybe starting with Claire, I guess, yeah, how you found the, yeah, I guess the movies compared to each other, if you have seen other things, the musical, like books or whatever, but yeah, I guess how you found the movies from an artistic or sort of an enjoyment lens, first of all.
Well, it's hard to compare part one and part two, because if for anyone who's seen the musical, part two has always been weaker than part one. Especially in terms of how good the songs are, basically. If you're enjoyer of musical, you'll know that just like most of the songs in part one are just definitely better than most of them in part two. And I think that's like the reason why there's so much like more hate towards part two. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't help the fact that they did the same thing as part one where they try to elongate it. Mm-hmm. It's just like there were some scenes where this could be much shorter. Maybe we didn't need the extra songs.
Yeah, the source material wasn't as strong. Yeah, what about you, Ruby?
Well, I haven't actually seen the musical, unfortunately, although I would really like to. So I've just watched the movies. Yeah, I enjoyed them. I thought, obviously, the like production of it was insane. Like, the set and the acting and everything was incredible. The songs were great. I'd have to concur with Claire that I think part two was like decidedly weaker than part one. I think also the pacing was so different. Like part one feels like it happens over a lot. Like the span of time is so much shorter. And then part two, it kind of felt like it was rushing to cover years of stuff that was happening. But I think it's worth a watch, especially if you're a fan of musicals.
Which Lottie is.
Yeah. I love them both. I think the second one has more weaknesses. The stage musicals, Act Two, as well as Claire saying, it's kind of wicked. It's also a lot shorter and more kind of rushed. Like when you're on stage, you can kind of jump from one scene to the next without the need for an explanation of like, where are we now? How did we get here? Whereas with movies, that would be a lot more jarring. And so they did need to kind of connect scenes and kind of like add in details that were maybe left unsaid in the musical, and you can kind of just accept that, okay, I don't really know where they are, but that's fine. This is a good song. Whereas in the movie, it may be by trying to like answer some of the questions, it leaves more room, I think, for like, well, I don't agree with that choice. So, yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to kick things off around the animal rights stuff?
Yeah. So, like I said, yeah, in the musical and in the movie, a big theme is how the animals start being oppressed. So, a big place where this kind of kicks off is where so Elphaba and her school friends have a teacher called Dr. Dillamond, who's a goat, and he's their history teacher. And then one day at school, he's just kind of like dragged out of class, and a new teacher comes in. And he has a lion cub who might become relevant later in the story. And he's like, oh, we have this, we've got this new invention called a cage. It's really great because the animals aren't allowed to socialize with each other, and this means they don't learn to talk. And then Elphaba, says, can you imagine a world where animals are kept in cages and they never learn to speak? And I think that's a pretty relevant quote. So I guess maybe to throw out to all of you, I guess, how do you interpret this line as a vegan, and how do you think maybe people who aren't vegan, aren't really animal rights focused, might interpret this line? Do you want to start with Ruby, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely the first part of that that sentence, like, can you imagine a world where animals are kept in cages? I was like, yes.
Yeah,
that's exactly the one we live in.
Yeah.
But then don't learn to speak. I suppose you could say that, I mean, definitely, like, you know, factory farms in particular are depriving non-human animals of so much of their kind of natural behaviours. You know, animals like chickens, for example, you know, can only recognize like 100 other chickens. And so kept in like this, you know, environment where there's thousands of others. And often, you know, in battery farms as well, they're kept in tiny cages. They, you know, exhibit more like violent and cannibalistic behaviors that would be, you know, a lot more uncommon in the wild. And, you know, other things of that nature. So, you know, while we can't say exactly that, you know, that pigs would learn to speak or anything. But I think definitely you can kind of draw a connection there where, like, yeah, animals are, by being kept in cages and being kept in cruel conditions, are kind of unable to grow into their full potential as sentient feeling creatures.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. In terms of how people who aren't vegan probably interpret this, and I think this can probably be said for a lot of media where there's talking animals, they actually, the way they probably try to make this is, instead of using people, they use animals as oppressive things in media. Because I think, even though a lot of people probably say they care about humans more, in terms of media, there's more sympathy than if it was a human. Mm.
We've talked about, like, when Nick, we did an episode on Chicken Run, and I think I made the point that, like, that's a very, like, stark example of, like, chickens kept for, like, first laying and then to be killed, but because they're basically human-like, I think it's easy to kind of overlook the like, to us, pretty strong animal rights message when you've got animals that are talking and like acting like humans, basically. I think you make a good point that being animals somehow can make characters more sympathetic than if they were just another group of humans.
Yeah, it's like they're using animals to sort of represent human repression, even though maybe, like, in terms of using animals, maybe there should be a bit more focus on animal suppression. And, it's just, like, it's hard to sort of see it as animal suppression when they do talk and have jobs.
Yep.
Because you don't see, like, the human side of it.
Yep.
Yeah, and we did, with Ruby and Claire, we did an episode in BoJack Horseman a while back as well. I kind of remind, we had similar discussions about the anthropomorphized animals in that one as well. Yeah, similar kind of issues.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I agree with all that. I think that, like, for me as a vegan, it hits pretty hard to have that said. Like, imagine a world where animals are kept in cages. I think that they never learn to speak kind of undercuts the message a little bit.
It sort of brings it back to the fantasy rather
exactly.
than reality. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And when I've seen it in the theatre, it's like, I obviously don't know what everyone's thinking, but, like, people laugh at that line. Like, it's a little bit uncomfortable, but it's, like, a bit of an uncomfortable laugh, it seems like. But I think people seem to be kind of acknowledging, like, oh, yeah, we do keep them in cages, but it's okay. They don't learn to speak, so they're not, you know, it's not as bad as what we do in the real world. And I guess I'm a linguist, and so I think a lot about language. I think, yeah, as Claire kind of touched on, language and intelligence are kind of used as markers of humanity in fantasy fiction. So because animals don't learn to speak like humans, we're kind of, able to kind of just push that aside. I think we should think about that kind of, to me, kind of leads into dangerous territory where does that kind of allow us to say, well, people who have lower intelligence or people who can't talk, are they somehow less human because we're kind of using language and intelligence as, like, this marker of humanity? I think that really leads into dangerous territory. And for us as animal justice advocates, we're not using these kinds of markers as what makes someone worth, not suffering and not being oppressed. For us, it's more like the ability to suffer, maybe having a central nervous system, things like that. I think it kind of speaks to this kind of somewhat arbitrary distinction in how we separate humans and animals, because animals do have lots of skills that we don't really give them credit for. They have sophisticated social structures. They do communicate even though they don't speak. Yeah, things like that.
Yeah. And one thing that I've sort of noted in the second movie is that when it goes to Dr. Dillamond in the cage, yeah, it's a big emphasis on, yeah, he can no longer speak.
Mm.
But I noticed there's a lot of other animals in the movie that are still working with the humans that don't speak at all, and they're not really, like, at the center of it.
Yeah.
One is the fence's name?
Again? Oh, Fiero?
Yeah, Fiero's horse.
Yeah.
He's in the movie. In the first movie, yeah, you actually hear him speaking when he first meets Alphabar. But in the second movie, I know it's a few years later, maybe he's lost the ability to speak.
Yeah.
But he doesn't say anything and they don't bring that up at all.
Yeah.
Mm.
And even with Glinda in her room when she's getting ready, she has birds around her. She's got little foxes or cats around her. And they're kind of very much sidelined as well.
Yeah. I thought that was interesting too, that Glinda isn't part of the animal rights movement like Elphaba is, but somehow her best friends helping her get ready on her wedding are animals, but animals who don't talk. It kind of muddies the waters a little bit.
Yeah, to me it feels just like, you know, that those are the animals who have kind of decided that rather than, you know, fight back and like keep speaking, that they'll kind of allow themselves to be subjugated so that they can live relatively like safe lives.
Yeah.
Same with like the flying monkeys. Like you don't really hear Chistery, his name. Yeah, you don't hear him speak until like the very end of the movie. Basically, he's just kind of like expressing himself with his face. And then yeah, another thing that I recalled from the first movie was that like the jazz band in the Oz Dust Ballroom was all like animals, but no animals were like on the dance floor.
Yeah.
So I was like, what? Like it kind of reminded me a little bit. And I'm not sure if this is what they were going for, but, you know, of, like, having, like a black jazz band, but then, like, everyone in the audience is white, kind of, like, 1950s.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I think that's very much what they were trying to represent.
Yeah.
That might be a good opportunity for a song.
Yeah.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Do you want to introduce it, Lottie? I don't know if you want to mention because those listening to the podcast version won't actually hear the music, unfortunately. A reminder, you can listen to the show live to catch the music, or also via 3cr.org.au/freedom of species. If you hit play on the latest episode within the week after it airs, you can hear the whole show with all the music. So do you want to mention the lyrics before the song or after, or what do you think?
I don't know if I need to go through the lyrics. So it's the song Something Bad from Wicked, and this is really the only song where the animals get a voice. So in my opinion, it's one of musically probably the worst songs of the musical, which is a bit of a shame that's the only opportunity they get to really talk and sing. But it kind of speaks, it's basically about the animals kind of increasingly like disappearing and losing their jobs and things like that.
Ready to take it away, Ruby?
Sure, yeah.
Freedom of Species would like to thank Project Fresh Start for their financial support of this program. Project Fresh Start provides free plant-based food to the community, with a focus on providing healthy, fresh plant-based food and education around healthy eating and living in a way that sustains the individual, the community, the animals, and the planet. To find out more about our community lunches and programs, check out projectfreshstart.org.au.
Welcome back to Freedom of Species on 3CR Community Radio. We are discussing Wicked through an animal rights lens. And yeah, we just heard the song, which was Something Bad from the movie. Do you want to highlight some key lyrics there for listeners, Lottie?
Yeah, so it starts with Dr. Dillamond, the goat professor, saying, I've heard of an ox, a professor from Quox, no longer permitted to teach, who has lost all powers of speech, and an owl in Munchkin Rock, a vicar with a thriving flock, forbidden to preach, now he only can screech. Only rumours, but still enough to give pause to anyone with pause, something bad is happening in Oz.
Mm, yeah, very relevant. And we've also had a text in. If you'd like to text in any of your own comments on Wicked or anything we cover on the show, the number is 0488 809 855. One more time, 0488 809 855. So the text in we've had says, it seems like the need to give animals rights only in as much as they are similar to humans undercuts any animal rights message in the film / musical, and instead makes it seem much more strongly just a civil rights allegory.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, I think I, and yeah, I know Ruby mentioned that with the jazz musicians as well. And I must admit, this is another thing, but Avatar, I remember at the time, I know like Peter tried to jump on board Avatar and kind of portraying, what is it, the Na'vi, I think it is, like as like analogy for non-human animals. And for me, I took it as much more of an analogy for like colonialism and kind of like human oppression. I guess you can interpret it different ways, but I guess because they were so human-like, I kind of much more tended to view it that way. Or maybe about like, yeah, I know people in Palestine made analogies as well, and that kind of thing, and that's got a more connection I made, and yeah, indigenous people generally. Yeah, anything you want to say about the comment, or is that kind of,
I guess, just that I do agree that the civil rights aspect is important too, and we'll cover that a little bit later, that we're not, I'm not trying to say that like animal oppression is the only issue and that we should be ignoring the clear kind of parallels to human oppression. But I think, given that they are animals, it gives us kind of, we can talk, we're talking about both. And
yeah.
To us, it's both are important.
Yeah, they can use animals to talk about civil rights. We can use their movie to talk about veganism.
Yeah.
I just wanted to briefly mention, again, with the animal rights themes and other social justice themes as well, but in terms of the animal rights themes, both of the lead actors are plant-based. So they've both been plant-based since 2013. And Ariana Grande said, I love animals more than I love most people. Not kidding. I'm a firm believer in eating a full plant-based diet, whole food diet that can expand your life length and make you an all-round happier person. Definitely the health angle. But, yeah, she definitely is very much an animal rights person too. And I was talking off-air that, all of her products are vegan, that she has in terms of, like, product lines, but also she's even refused to sell in China where animal testing is compulsory for cosmetic products. And so a lot of otherwise vegan companies do test on animals because it's such a big market commercially. So she's a vocal animal advocate, reportedly adopted at least 10 rescue dogs. And Arevo has said that she's found it's the healthiest option for her body. So more of a health angle, whereas, Grande is definitely the health, but also the animal rights as well. I thought that was somewhat relevant, the fact that neither of them eat animals in a movie that does have animal rights themes in it.
Yeah, and I believe Marissa Bode, who plays Nessa, Elphaba's sister, is also vegan, but I couldn't find much information on that. But
okay. Yeah,
I think it's fitting that in this film, a lot of the cast don't eat animals. We'll maybe wrap up this part of it. So I think just a few other things to note are that in the second part of the movie in particular, some animal subjugation that happens that have very strong parallels to how animals are treated in the real world are that we've got animals shown carrying heavy loads, being whipped as they're being forced to build the yellow brick road.
Which would also have analogies with slavery as well, I guess.
It does. Yeah, exactly. And the monkeys, they undergo a painful spell to grow wings so that they can serve as the wizard spies. This kind of parallels with practices like tail docking, beak trimming, dehorning, declawing of animals for, like, whether they're pets or whether they're raised to to eat, to kill and eat. These are kind of things that are done for convenience by humans. So there are, quite strong parallels here with how animals are treated in reality. I think we've touched a bit on the animal's voice and perspective. So, I didn't really think that there was enough of that necessarily. Was there more that any of you wanted to say on that?
I just felt like, especially the second movie, I almost wanted them to make like a series out of the concept, because I just wanted that, like, the world to be more fleshed out.
Mm.
I wanted more details about, you know, what different groups of animals think. Obviously in the second movie we see there's like a group of animals who've decided to leave
mm-hmm.
Oz and go to like this world beyond where they're not really sure if they're gonna be able to make a life rather than lose their voice. So I think we get kind of like a few different, you know, we get to look at a few different types of animals. There's animals who have, you know, the flying monkeys join Elphaba in the end. We have animals who are staying and not speaking and kind of like, you know, allowing themselves to be safe, but also like giving their rights away basically. And then we have animals that have decided to leave, but it would have been really good to kind of see that fleshed out more. And as you said, like, there's only one song that the animals like sing in, which is a real shame. Like, I would have wanted to hear more about what they have to say, especially there being such a, like a vital like plot.
Yeah.
Device, basically.
Yeah, I think so. And the new song that Elphaba sings, No Place Like Home, I also think that's kind of musically a weak song compared to, like, her range. And I think that would have been a really good opportunity for an ensemble song between, like, with Elphaba, but also the animals, like, kind of like a, you know, a civil rights kind of we're standing up kind of song. And the plot then, it turns out that pretty much all the animals are just kind of convinced to leave. I find it kind of unrealistic that every single animal would leave and none would kind of join Elphaba in her fight. I think it would have been more satisfying to me if it was more of like Elphaba working with like some animals to try and, you know, further this, rather than it kind of being like Elphaba, who's not an animal, is the key person at the center of the animal rights movement. I think I found that like a little bit unsatisfying.
I agree.
Yeah. And they could have really fleshed that out and just made that scene more interesting if, as Ruby said, they made it an ensemble song.
Yeah.
And then when the lion comes in, if they gave him like a singing role in that section and made it really powerful, then it could have been like a greater force that pushed all of the animals out.
Yeah. Mm. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think that was not super well thought out how they did that. Cause the lion comes, he's ostensibly a cowardly lion, but then he's just completely voluntarily like jumping up and like talking in front of Elphaba, who she's apparently the one who's made him so cowardly. He manages to convince every single animal to leave and not to join the fight with Elphaba. I just found that a little bit simplistic compared to how like political movements actually happen in the real world, where there's like diversity in people's like choices in what they do.
Yeah, it was a bit thrown together. Like, I'm fairly certain that whole scene is original content to the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And just with the second movie in general. So, they've made it longer to suit, I guess, a movie format. But a lot of it, like, that scene just feels like such filler
mm-hmm.
when they could have used all of that extra screen time to do more of, like, what Ruby wanted and had more lore for the animals in the world, which I guess I was happy with them starting off with the animal labor building the yellow brick road, because that sort of helped bring it back into focus on the animal oppression.
Yeah.
Which is something that the musical didn't do.
It's more than the musical did in terms of bringing it back to the animal the animal fight. So yeah, it's better than what the musical was able to fit in, but not really satisfying.
Yeah,
for,
just not enough
for me. Yeah,
it just kind of felt like at the end of the day, what they wanted to do was write a movie about Elphaba and Glinda.
Yeah.
And that was the focus of the movie.
Yeah.
And like the animal rights, like the social movement, like fascism plotline was always going to be secondary to that, and they were kind of more prioritizing, like, let's show off these like great actresses and their beautiful voices, which is like understandable, but you can tell like that they didn't write it with the intention of, you know, making a really big statement about social movements or anything like that. It was just always kind of like secondary, like a plot device.
Yeah. And I think another thing to add is that act two of the musical and movie need to fit with the plot of The Wizard of Oz. And so they are kind of constrained there, because in The Wizard of Oz, Elphaba is obsessed with getting her sister's shoes back. And so it, I guess if you want that to still be canon, she does kind of need to forget about the animal issues to some extent to do this like somewhat contradictory thing and now just be obsessed with getting these shoes back.
Yeah. Mm. And she does that after the song No Good Deed.
Yeah.
And I would like to mention when I listened to that song thinking about veganism. Mm. So she's gone through all these battles trying to be good. And then suddenly she's like, okay, nothing good has come out of this, so I'm going to push it aside. I've seen that. I've talked to a few activists for veganism, and some of them get burnt out from constant activism, being like, I'm trying to do something good for animals and I'm getting nothing back. And then they put themselves in a burnout. And I feel like that's what happened with Elphaba. She's gone through all this activism for these animals and has then burnt herself out, which is something, that happens, I think, pretty often in real life.
Yeah, yeah.
I think a question that stands out to me, and this isn't Wicked specific, but also, like, how explicit does the message have to be for a non-vegan audience to connect with the animal rights theme? As sort of the person texting in and a bunch of you have raised, it's like, oh, yeah, in this fictional world where animals, like, speak in, like, human language, that's a shame in the story, narratively, that they're put in cages, therefore I lose their voice, but I'm not at all connecting that to everyday life. But at the same time, there is some kind of animal rights message, and this is such a huge movie that's everywhere. And in comparison, there are obviously movies that have a really explicit animal rights message. I'm thinking back to the Animal Liberation Film Festival, which we've covered on the show, and I recently went to, like, movies like A44, for example, which was like a zombie movie all based around veganism, but that's like an indie, like obscure, like, you know, not reaching a large amount of people. So I feel like there is that kind of trade-off of, like, reaching a large audience but sort of sidelining the political, including animal rights themes, or doing a really political animal rights movie but then being niche. Like, so I feel like both of those, like, have their strengths and weaknesses, I guess.
Yeah. I think it does, the way they kind of handle it, though, it doesn't only kind of betray the animal rights message. I think it also betrays the, like, wider political civil rights message as well. Like, whether you're looking at the animals as an analogy for civil rights or animal rights, the focus on Glinda and Elphaba's story does kind of betray the complexity there, I think, a little bit.
Yeah. Should we go to the next song?
Do you think so.
And move into sort of some other political themes in the movie. So maybe we'll talk about some of the key lyrics again after the song. But do you want to introduce why you've chosen this one, Lottie?
Yeah. So this one is "Defying Gravity" from Wicked. It's probably one of the best songs. I think a lot of people would agree. And this is kind of Elphaba's turning point, where this is when she realizes that the wizard doesn't want to help her and the animals, the animal rights movement. He is the one actually behind their oppression. And so she realizes she can't work with him like she'd always dreamed. And she needs to kind of go off alone, no matter like what it means for her and her reputation.
Freedom of Species thanks Animal Free Science Advocacy for their financial support of this program. Animal Free Science Advocacy works to create a future where no animals are harmed in the name of science, and scientific progress is advanced through animal-free research methods. Become a member today by visiting animalfreesci.org.au.
That's animalfreesci.org.au.
Welcome back to Freedom of Species. You're on 3CR Radical Radio. And yeah, we are discussing Wicked through an animal rights lens. We're also going to go into some other social justice issues that are present in the movie as well. Just a quick shout out for those listening live. You would have heard the announcement, particularly for podcast listeners. Monday, 26th of January, Invasion Day is coming up very soon. So yeah, if you are able to get to a rally anywhere in Australia, I encourage you to do that. But also 3CR is going to be covering the rally and also other First Nations broadcasters and music all throughout the day. So 26th of January, 10 a.m. till 5 p.m. So you can tune in that before or after the rally, as well as during the rally if you can't make it along as well. So you can listen live via 8:55 a.m. if you're in Melbourne and have a radio, but you can also stream from 3cr.org.au from anywhere around the world as well, plus the Community Radio Plus app as well. So encourage people to get along to that, and I do think it is, I guess we're going to be talking a bit about perhaps about race, but also ableism as well. I think it's great that 3CR makes that recording available for people who might struggle to get along to a rally in person as well. But I'll hand over to Lottie for the final section.
Yeah. So,
Can I jump in one more thing? Actually?
Yeah, go ahead.
Just with Jan 26th, I saw last night on ABC, Always Was Tonight. I don't know if any of you have seen that, but it's by Tony Armstrong, all Indigenous presenters around January 26th, but also, yeah, a wide range of other issues, Indigenous kids being locked up as young as 10 years old and those kind of issues as well, in the format of a kind of a comedy show as well. But there's lots of important information in as well. So I think that's another good thing to check out on or around Jan 26th or any time, really.
Yep, great. So yeah, we've been focusing a lot about the animal oppression in Wicked from a vegan perspective, but it is obviously also an analogy for fascism and racism. I think we can also kind of see parallels with the way animals exist in this world, in the Oz world, and ableism. And so I've seen some discourse online after Wicked for Good came out, specifically. Jeff Goldblum was apparently talking in an interview about how he's gone vegetarian after being in Wicked because of the animal rights message, but there was then some criticism that he didn't really acknowledge the kind of the clear kind of fascism themes of it.
I wonder also having like the vegan or plant-based eaters around him as well.
So I think it's important not to kind of, become kind of single issue vegan about interpreting this movie. But what I'd kind of like to do is give a bit of a summary for why speciesism, racism, ableism, they're all systems of oppression that they're tied up together, and it's not really a question of caring about one over the other. They're all really interrelated. So in the world of Oz, the animals are oppressed. We see some analogies with disability, the way that Dr. Dillamond in his home and in the classroom. So, for example, he has like a projector that turns on when he kicks it, and his teapot in his house kind of has a different mechanism rather than like a handle for him to pour it. There's something that like fits with his hoof. So I think that's kind of cool to see. Before the animals were oppressed, there were different accessibility options for animals. And then Elphaba being green is, I guess you can see that as like, it can be kind of considered like a disability or like a facial difference, like an analogy for racism, different skin color. So I think I'll start off with talking about some of the issues of how speciesism and racism kind of have historically and currently intersected with each other, and feel free to jump in with other thoughts. So there's a long history of racialized groups being dehumanized. So, under Terra Nullius in Australia, Aboriginal people were not considered humans. It was considered that there weren't any humans who lived here, and that justified colonization of the continent. There's been a long history of Palestinians being referred to as animals by Zionists. So on October 9th, 2023, the Defence Minister, Yoav Gallant, said, "We're fighting human animals and we will act accordingly." And that's, you know, that's used to justify their slaughter and genocide. Animal names are frequently used as racial slurs to describe different racialized groups, including African people, Aboriginal people. And then, so to bring this to Wicked and Oz, we see, especially in part two, that the animals are the first to be oppressed, and then the Munchkins become oppressed under Nessa, the Wicked Witch of the East in Wizard of Oz, she's the governor of Munchkin Land. So she does this for her own like personal gain. But I think the message here is that like once we allow one group of beings to be exploited, it can easily follow that other groups can become exploited. So the fact that animals mean so little in society means that referring to groups as animals, it is insulting and it is harmful, and it evokes fear because we treat animals so badly.
Yeah, and I think that scene shows that repressing one group of people really affects so many down the line,
mm-hmm.
because she starts by signing the travel permits for animals just because she doesn't want to be seen as her sister. She doesn't want to be disrespected, or she's scared of how society will see her. So she signs for animals. And yeah, even though she's also the one that signed for Munchkins, it just shows that how one problem can lead
to more. It's a slippery slope to, yeah, and it kind of opens the door, oppressing one group to like, well, now we have travel bans for animals. It's not hard to bring the same into effect for Munchkins.
Yeah.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. I think those racist analogies, I remember reading, I think it was like an academic thing or something, but those analogies, like that racial group is like that animal, it devalues that both that racial group because they're saying you're lesser because you're like that animal, but it also continues the devaluation of other animals as well, because it kind of reinforces that idea, like being referred to an animal is a slur as well. Yeah. So it devalues both those groups in the one sort of phrase. Yeah.
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 Yeah, I think it just goes to show, and we can, I think, you know, as vegans or just as people who are interested in social movements, can take Wicked as a really good parable for this, that the category of animal itself is, like, in a lot of ways, socially constructed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just a category for animals that are not humans. It's also a category that humans, different groups of humans, can be forced into.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of the further you are away from, you know, I guess the ideal human, which is, you could say, like a white, cisgender, heterosexual, able-bodied man, the more you are at risk of being animalized. You know, even women, like white women, mm-hmm. like can face this as well and have done throughout history as being called like hysterical, and as, you know, kind of having their being, you know, more emotional, quote unquote, as being like a sign of how they're inferior to men and kind of closer to having less an animal.
Animals.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think just quickly before we move to the issue of ableism, just a few kind of bullet point other issues of how racism and speciesism intersect. And you can, yeah, so there's environmental racism. So this is kind of an umbrella term for ways in which racialized communities are disproportionately affected by environmental destruction. So industrial polluters, landfills, trash incinerators, coal plants, animal waste dumps are likelier to be located in areas where more racialized people live, and they're then likelier to face consequences in terms of poor health, in their communities because of that. Food apartheid or food deserts is where people have less access to a wide variety of fresh whole foods. This disproportionately affects low-income communities and racialized communities. Slaughterhouse workers, commercial fishers, people who work to kill the animals that are then eaten are also generally kept or work in very poor conditions, paid very poorly. It's a very it's traumatic work. There's danger of injury, repetitive stress injury, things like that. And they don't necessarily, by being low income, more likely to be immigrant workers, they don't have the choice necessarily to work in these industries. And so there's obviously the you know horrific conditions of the animals, but this also affects the people forced to work in these conditions. And then like Nick said, the forced labour that we see of the animals in Oz, this happens around the world. Like we talked in a recent episode about cobalt mining in Democratic Republic of Congo.
Yeah, summer special, yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
You can read more on this, on lots of these issues on Food Empowerment Project by navigating to Under the Issues. They have lots of different kind of articles about different ways that racism and speciesism are kind of intertwined in our world. And so now, yeah, talking more about speciesism and disability, like with racism, there's a long history of disabled people also being compared to animals and dehumanized in this way. Sunara Taylor is a great disability and vegan advocate. So her book Beasts of Burden and her she's been on podcasts. So, for example, I listened to recently the Dig podcast, Beasts of Burden with Sunara Taylor. She talks a lot about this issue. So she's a great person to read up on or listen in on that. So she talks about how going through my notes. Basically, disability as well as racism, like animals, they're another category that are created and exploited by capitalism to maximize profits for the ruling class. And domestic animals, they're systematically bred to maximize profit, and therefore a lot are disabled. So they might be unable to stand from being bred to maximize the flesh on their bodies. Cows get arthritis from producing so much milk. Birds are de-beaked. So, yeah, there are lots of comparisons there we can make too between disability in humans and disability in animals. And so, yeah, I think overall we should be avoiding single-issue veganism. We should be avoiding only caring about animal oppression and, really think of all this as real intertwined issues.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think also, like, going the other way as well, I feel like in human social justice movements, it's often like, oh, we're being treated like animals or no better than animals. So I think we also, like, putting things the other way, I think the human social justice movements also need to consider animal, like, non-human animals as well and broaden there just as the single issue vegans should do as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yep. All right. So we've got rotations coming up, which we're going to be doing, or Ruby's going to be doing. Do you want to, talk about what you're going to be covering on that show, Ruby?
Sure, yeah.
And we'll give you a little, if you are listening live, you'll get a bit of a preview of the type of music we'll be playing, I guess, yeah.
So you know me as Ruby, but I also have just started DJing and producing music last year. My artist name is Ramdragon, I'm going to be spinning a little set for you. It's a bit of a multi-genre set. I've got some, like, house, some hyperpop, and also some bass music as well. Just a little bit of everything. So, hopefully not too harsh of an introduction for those who are new to EDM. But in the spirit of 3CR, I've also tried to stack the set with as many kind of homegrown artists as possible, and then some like activist coded tunes as well. So I'll just play you, I guess, a little song that I couldn't fit in the set, but that I've been really liking lately.
Cool. So we'll go to that song in a sec. So again, stay tuned for that. And if you are listening to the podcast and that takes your interest, you can find this show via 3cr.org.au/rotations. And you can also check it out there if you are listening to the podcast version. So thanks to all of you for joining me for the Freedom of Species show. And yeah, again, if you are listening live, make sure you stay tuned for rotations. Take it away, Ruby, whenever you're ready.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.